Well, good morning. Welcome to CORE. We are so glad you guys are here with us this morning. You can go ahead, have a seat really quickly. As you do so, I want to take a second to introduce myself if we have never met before. My name is Ben. I'm the lead pastor here at CORE. And no matter what your story says about you, no matter what you walked in here with, no matter how you feel like your life is trending right now, whether you're sitting here in person or you're watching online, we want you to know this one thing. We want you here. In fact, we've been praying for you and preparing for you. And the reason that is because we believe two things about every single story in this room, every single story that's watching online, and that is this. First, your story matters. We believe with all of our heart that every single story in here matters. It matters to God, and in turn, it matters to us. No matter how off base or how bad you think your story is, we want you to know that your story matters. And secondly, what we believe with all of our heart is that your story isn't over. Is that you are here and you are alive and you are breathing. And what that means is we believe with all of our hearts that your story has some incredible potential in its future. A potential that we have a God that wants you to realize and reach as you move forward throughout this journey called life. And this morning, we're continuing on with part four of this five-part series that we have been calling Kingdom Culture. And we've been looking at how every single story in this room begins to bring about a kingdom culture to the culture around us. And because your story matters and the stories of the people you rub elbows with every single day matters, it's what drives a series like this. It's what makes it so important. Because you will not rub elbows with a single person in our city, in your neighborhood, around your kitchen table, whose story and future does not matter to God. And who God wants to bump into this irresistibleness of his kingdom culture that has the power and the potential to change lives and to change darkness into light and to change dismal circumstances into hope. You see, that's what this series is all about. This series is about an opportunity that every single one of us in this room who consider ourselves to be a Christ follower has lying in front of us. An opportunity for us to bring about a slice of the kingdom of heaven to the world in which we live. Because what we believe with all of our hearts is this. Is that every single one of us, as we look around at the world in which we live, what we would testify to is this. Is that things are not perfect. Things are not how we would hope them to be it within our marriages, be it within our neighborhoods, be it within our city, or be it within the world as a whole. That we look out and we would testify to the fact that things just aren't perfect. But what we believe with all of our heart is that a world at its worst needs a church at its best. And while we haven't been that, it doesn't mean that we won't continue to strive for that. It doesn't mean that we won't acknowledge our shortcomings and our failures in our past and strive to be better as we move forward at bringing about a slice of kingdom culture to the culture around us. And the question that we've been addressing every single week of this series is this. Why is this so important? Why is this so important for me or you as a Christ follower, for me or you who call CORE Community Church home? Well, the reason why it's so important and it's imperative to our life and our walk of faith is this. It's because we follow a dude named Jesus who made it known that his very purpose for being on this earth was to bring a slice of kingdom culture to earth. Was to bring a piece of the kingdom of heaven to earth to everybody he came in contact with. And every single week of this series, we've been coming back to this one passage. This one passage that sets us on equal footing and allows us to see with clarity the purpose in which Jesus Christ has that now in turn calls us to that exact same purpose. And this morning will be no different. This morning we're going to dive into the book of Luke chapter 4. And if you haven't done so already, it's a perfect opportunity for you to grab that weekly that you got when you came in and to crack that open and pull out the notes page on the inside. It'll help you follow along as we move through the text and even some fill in the blanks as we go. But here is what Jesus made known was his very purpose, his reason for being sent to this earth almost 2,000 years ago. We find it in the book of Luke chapter 4, starting in verse 43. But he, meaning Jesus, replied, "I must preach the good news of the kingdom of God in other towns too, because that is why I was sent." It doesn't get much clearer than that, right? Like, why did Jesus come? There he capped it off at the very end. This is why I was sent. I was sent to bring a piece of the kingdom of heaven, to bring God's kingdom to this earth and to bring it to as many towns as I could bring it to. What Jesus was saying here was, this is no longer a message. You want to parlay it into something that's relevant for you and I? This is no longer a message that's for my hometown. No longer a message that's for my church. This is a message that's just too good to not be spread into the world around us. To not be brought into every boardroom you walk into, every teacher's meeting you're a part of, every lunch table you sat down at in your middle school or your high school, every kitchen table conversation you have with your family, every night you're laying in bed with your spouse, having your final conversation of the day. This is too good to not be a central figure in everything you do for this world. That is what we get to experience through Jesus, is a slice of the kingdom of heaven. And in turn, God looks at us and says, now that you've experienced this irresistible, untangible element that changes your life and changes your eternity, don't keep it to yourself. Begin to allow other people to experience that in their lives, in their hurt, in their dark circumstances of their lives. But in order for us to do that in an incredible way and spread that kingdom culture into our worlds, there's a crucial question that we haven't acknowledged yet within this series. And that crucial question that changes everything is this: how desperate are you to see the kingdom of heaven collide with other people's lives? As a Christ follower, how desperate are you to see the kingdom culture collide with others' lives? Because if the kingdom culture, a slice of the kingdom of heaven that Jesus came to bring, changes lives, changes eternities, changes dark places, then shouldn't we be so committed to bringing that kingdom culture into a hurting world and into hurting friends' lives that we become desperate about following that mission? And frankly, the question could expand broader than that. Are we, as a church, desperate about chasing the mission that God has given us? About bringing a slice of the kingdom of heaven, not just into a room for an hour on Sunday morning? Are we far more desperate than that? That when we go back out into our lives, into the real world of Monday through Saturday, that this is a constant reverberation of every interaction we have, of every word we speak, of everything that people see in us and outside of us as we walk through hurtful situations, as we walk through valley moments of our lives. What do people see modeled in us? Are we desperate enough to want to have the kingdom of heaven collide with the lives of the people we love most? And the reason that I strategically use that word desperate is this, is because every single one of us knows that desperation quickens our pace. Am I right? That when we feel desperate towards a cause, we become laser focused. We push everything else aside to chase that one thing with reckless abandon. That we know that in our state of desperation, that nothing will stand in the way of us, if need be, going towards a new solution and a new destination to bring about the necessary change. That's what desperation does in every single one of us. It doesn't matter what facet of your life it is. When we begin to operate out of desperation, things begin to change much quicker than usual. And you see, we're being called as Christ followers to begin to operate out of a sense of desperation. To begin to ask the question as we look at our lives and the lives of the people around us, are we desperate for healing? Are we desperate for life change? Are we desperate for positive impact? Are we desperate for something better? And about 2,000 years ago, a young woman came face to face with every single one of those questions. And her response to those questions sets the table for where you and I go from here. For the difference you and I are being called to make and are capable of making in the world around us. We find the story of this young woman as she comes face to face for the very first time with this guy named Jesus, who she had only heard stories about, who she had only heard things that she was untrue of whether or not they were actually true. Was he actually healing people? Was he actually who everybody said he was? And in this moment, in the midst of all of her questions, she decides to seek him out, to chase a new solution with reckless abandon and a new destination for a possible fix of her problems. We find this story in the book of Mark, chapter 5, starting in verse 22. It's going to come up on the screen for you as well, but here is how the story goes. Then a leader of the local synagogue, whose name was Jairus, arrived. When he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet, pleading fervently with him. "My little daughter is dying," he said. "Please come and lay your hands on her. Heal her so she can live." Jesus went with him, and all the people followed, crowding around him. Now, let me set a little bit of context for you all on what exactly is taking place and paint a picture in your mind of what's happening in this moment. What we see taking place in this moment is Jesus has just done some miracles. He's just done some healing, and he gets into a boat, and he crosses to the other side of the lake, hoping that it will be an opportunity for him to find some seclusion. And so he's hoping to outrun this giant crowd of people that's around him. And he lands the boat, gets out of the boat, and basically the people have gone around the lake and have met him on the other side. And so he finds himself getting out of the boat to this giant crowd of people, everyone who's followed, and now everyone who's heard he's coming and has gathered there at the shore. And so here he finds all these people, and this dude named Jairus comes up and he's like, "Hey, my daughter's dying. I've heard that you can do something about it. Would you come to my house and fix her?" And so in this, everybody, their ears perk up and they're like, "All right, here we go. We're going to get a front row seat to whether this guy is who he says he is, whether he can heal and do miracles like we have heard about." And so in this moment, the way you can picture it is it's like this giant concert. It's like a mosh pit that's happening, and everybody is pressed around Jesus. And they begin to travel to Jairus' house. And everybody, not wanting to be left behind, presses closer and closer, trying not to stumble over each other, trying not to trample each other. And they move in this giant blob. And as they're moving in this giant, compact, pressed together, crowded area, we see a side story come into the spotlight. Check this out. A woman in the crowd had suffered for 12 years with constant bleeding. She had suffered a great deal from many doctors, and over the years, she had spent everything she had to pay them, but she had gotten no better. In fact, she had actually gotten worse. She had heard about Jesus, so she came up behind him through the crowd and touched his robe. For she thought to herself, "If I can just touch his robe, I will be healed." Immediately, the bleeding stopped, and she could feel in her body that she had been healed of her terrible condition. You see, in this very moment, in this story, we see this young woman begin to operate with absolute desperation. Nothing she had tried to fix her circumstances had worked in the past. And so out of her desperation, she begins to move towards a new destination. She begins to move towards a new solution. And the only solution she could think of was a dude named Jesus. If I can just touch this guy named Jesus, then maybe it will fix the things that I've walked through. She recognized something was broken, and she tried to push everything else aside to fix what was broken. Several years ago, when I was a young kid, probably fifth or sixth grade, I learned a new game. And some of you are going to recognize this new game that I was taught and began to learn at that young age. And this game is played on a board much like this one. And for me, the game that I was taught at this young age was a game called chess. If you ever played chess before, what you know about chess is this, is there is a ton of strategy involved in chess, right? every single piece moves in a different way. There's different rules involved, different goals, different strategies of like, you got to protect this certain person in a certain way and this other one in a certain way. And they do different things. And then you've just got these pawns that are out there just to wreak havoc. And like, you just put them in the way for them to kind of be taken by the other team and not be, you know, taken by you and all those sorts of things. And essentially, in this game called chess, it is incredibly complicated. Am I right? For any of us who have tried to pick up this game, the initial rules and regulations of chess are complicated. But there's another game that can also be played on this identical board. And that game is checkers. That's right, checkers. And if you've ever played the game of checkers, what you know is that checkers stands in direct contrast to chess. Because checkers is not complicated, right? Like, the entire goal of checkers is simply this: to jump over the enemy and get to the other side. That's it. That's what you're supposed to accomplish in checkers. You jump over the enemy, the imposing team, and you get to the other side. And the crazy thing, the correlation to our lives is this: is that many times as we walk through life, what we find ourselves doing is this, is we turn life into chess with all the complications and all the rules and all the different strategies and all the different goals, when God intended us to live life like checkers. That our life was designed to be lived in such a way that the goal that trumps everything else is for you to get over the enemy and get to the other side and to help as many pieces around you do the exact same thing. Hello. That's it. But so often in our lives, we've allowed the complications to take over and we've convinced ourselves that maybe life is really about making these things, these distractions, the goals and protecting these places of our lives and not allowing anything bad to happen to us and moving these pieces in this way and these pieces in this way and playing all of these different strategies to rise up the corporate ladder and to make sure our kids are the best they can possibly be and earning all the accolades and all the awards when it comes to sports. And we start to play this game that we were never designed to play. And God looks at us and he says, man, I've designed you to live this life to look at the ultimate purpose. It's not that all those things aren't good and aren't for some of your fulfillment and enjoyment, but you're missing the point that this is about jumping over the enemy and getting to the other side and helping as many people as you possibly can get to the other side as well. You see, the reality that I learned, though, is that as I began to play this game called checkers, while the goal of the game was to jump the enemy and get to the other side, the strategy that I found myself often using was this: get to the edges of the board and play it as safe as possible. Because when you get your pieces to the edges of the board, what you recognize is that there is only but one way you can be attacked. And they can't get you from the outside, they can only get you from the inside. But if you've ever played checkers before, what you recognize is this: there is no way to laterally move up the outside of the board. Eventually, you're going to have to make your way back into the dangerous middle of the game. And this week, as I was preparing for this message, I decided to do what I've often done when I have no idea what the best way to go about fixing something is, and that is to take myself to a YouTube tutorial. Greatest invention since fire and sliced bread. There are many things in my house that would still be broken without YouTube tutorials. It's like the new invention for, you guys remember these in bookstores? You used to be able to get the book for dummies of just about anything you were doing. That is the YouTube tutorial of these days. And so I decided I'm gonna hop on and I'm gonna find out what's the best way to play the game of checkers. And every single YouTube tutorial that I came across as far as the strategy to be the best checkers player, the strategy was not get to the outside and play it safe. Do you know what the best strategy was for getting to the other side? Right down the middle. Is to be as risky as possible and move all of your pieces towards the middle of the board and to put all of the pressure on the enemy and to put all of your weight into traveling as quickly as you can to the other side. That was the strategy that was given. And you see, for some of us, we listen to messages like this and you're like, well, Ben, I'm not playing the wrong game. I know what the purpose and the goal of life is. I know it's about jumping the enemy and getting to the other side. You see, for us, it's not about that we're playing the wrong game. For us, it's we're playing by the wrong strategy. As that we've spent so much of our lives playing it safe according to our reputation, playing it safe according to our finances, playing it safe according to our schedules, playing it safe that we don't want to encounter any hurtful situations or endure any pain. And so if we just push all of our pawns to the outside of the board, then that will keep us as safe as possible. And then one day, we turn around and we ask the question, why does it seem like I'm not making an impact on anyone? Why does it seem like I'm not making much of a difference in the world in which I live? Why does it seem like there is no such thing as kingdom culture flowing from me to the culture around me? It's because we've taken up the wrong strategy to this game called life. We're on the right board. We're just playing the wrong game. And we continue to play it safe. And what we miss time and time again is this. At some point as the church, at some point as individual Christ followers, we have to step forward and be willing to say, am I desperate enough now? Is the world around me desperate enough now? Is the hurt around me desperate enough for me to be willing to change strategies to make a greater impact? Are we desperate enough as a collective organization to change some of the things we do to be better at spreading a piece of the kingdom of heaven to the world around us? Are we desperate enough? And the reality for many of us that we must face is this. Sometimes we have to change strategies to get to the other side because like checkers, this is so cool. Like checkers, when we get to the other side, the game drastically changes in our favor. When we find ourselves getting to the other side, the game drastically changes in our favor, and we become people who, in a rapid pace, begin to make greater impacts than we have ever made in our lives. That's what lies before us. And many of us can relate to that truth and that reality because I'm willing to bet for every single person in this room, we've encountered moments of our lives, am I right, where there has been something that we're in the middle of. A hectic work life, dismal circumstances. And in those difficult seasons of our life, we've had this thought before. If I can just get past this season, then things will go back to normal. If I can just get through this, then life will get better, right? Have we all been at a stage of life at some point in which we've had those thoughts? I just got to get through this breakneck pace of 70-hour work weeks for the next couple of weeks, and then once I get to the other side of that, then my marriage will be better. Then my parenting will be better. Then my mental and emotional state will be better. And in the same way, we have a God who lays on the table for you and I that there are things standing in the way of who I've called you to be, and you need to find ways to get to the other side of those things so that you can be the kingdom culture ambassadors, the kingdom culture agents that I have created you to be. But the question we ask every week is this. Well, what are those things? What are those things as Christ followers, as the church, that we have to get past, get to the other side of, in order to begin to live out what God has called us to live out, in order to begin to chase the mission with absolute desperation for the sake of the world and the people we love who are around us every single day? And you see, the strategy for greatest impact really begins here. That in order for us to be the kingdom culture agents that we have been called to be as Christ followers, it means we have to start by getting to the other side of the diagnosis. By getting to the other side of the diagnosis. And in each of these things, we're going to travel back to the story of the young woman and begin to pull out truth of the things in her life that she had to find herself getting to the other side of. In verse 25, we see this from the story. a woman in the crowd had suffered for 12 years, and I helped you out as we moved through it the second time. In your notes there, you've got a few words underlined in every single passage. She'd suffered for 12 years with constant bleeding. And every time I've probably read this story in this very passage, probably a time or two or 100 in my life, and every time I've just kind of zipped right past that. Okay, she's bleeding, right? She's been bleeding for a long time. But there's this word that he places on the front end of bleeding that almost reads as an indictment. She has suffered constant bleeding. Constant is something that gives no relief. There's no stopping it. And when something has been constant for long enough, we begin to believe that there will never be any respite from that thing, that we'll always be stuck with it. If you've been living with something constantly for the last 12 years of your life, there's a good chance that you've just reserved yourself to the belief, I'll just have to deal with this for the rest of my life. If I haven't been able to do anything to get rid of it up until this point, then there's just no getting rid of it. And oftentimes we have those things throughout our life. It may not be a physical ailment like this young lady, but for some of us, it's a regret or a mistake of our past. It hangs over our life. It hangs over our head, and it's been that way for years or for decades. This colossal mistake that we've made. And what we begin to believe through that diagnosis of this mistake that taints us and makes us less than is this. There is no way that God could want me to be a part of his plan. Do you know how big of a mistake that was? That I've walked through that divorce, that I've walked through that piece where I wasn't faithful to my spouse, that I made this mistake of being put in jail or being addicted to this or addicted to that. Man, if anybody ever found out about those mistakes of my past, they would instantly chalk me up as a fraud anyways. And so what's the point of me trying to spread kingdom culture to the culture around me when obviously I'm not qualified for that? That these mistakes of my past have disqualified me, or the shortcomings I see in myself and my personality and the skill set I bring to the table couldn't possibly be used. For me, for many years of my life, the self-diagnosis that I suffered from was a self-diagnosis of this reality that I'm just not gifted in public speaking. That it made me fearful and uncomfortable, and I didn't like doing it. And because of that, there was this belief that began to sweep over me of like, there ain't no way I can do something in my profession or within my ministry that would cause me to have to use public speaking for the sake of the kingdom. Like, I have a God who is way smarter than that, and he knows just how bad I am, and there's no way he could use that in my life and in my ministry. And some of y'all are sitting there and you're like, you do say ain't a lot and y'all a lot, so it might be a pretty good diagnosis, Ben. But as I walked through this self-diagnosis and like, this is always going to be a shortcoming of mine, and this is always something that's not going to be used, the moment where I was capable of getting to the other side of that and not necessarily excelling at that but surrendering to that is the very moment where God says, aha, I've got you right where I want you. And this is why, Ben. Because you know you're not very good at this. And everybody else knows you're not very good at this. And so when something does go well, that's the very moment where your public speaking can be used for my glory, not yours. Because nobody's going to look at you when it goes well and say, oh my goodness, Ben's such an amazing public speaker. They know better. They'll know that in some way, not because of you, but in spite of you, God has showed up and done incredible things. That's the place that I need you. That's the place that I need you to surrender yourself to. That's the place where I need you to get past your self-diagnosis. And some of us need to ask ourselves the question, in the things of our life that's holding us back from chasing the mission and the purpose that God has given us to be kingdom ambassadors to a world that desperately needs it, who's given you the diagnosis that's holding you back? Seriously, who's given it to you? Because y'all, what I'm willing to bet is this, is that the God who created you and a God who loves you and a God who sees the best in you is not the one who wrote that diagnosis over you. For me, typically, I'm the one who wrote the diagnosis over me. Or in the moments where I'm most concerned with being a people pleaser, I allow other people to write the diagnosis over me. And let's just call it out for what it is. When I'm the one writing the diagnosis or I'm allowing other people to write the diagnosis, what's really taking place is this. There is an enemy who is darn good at what he does. And he's speaking through circumstances and speaking through other people and speaking through your own dysfunctional mental and emotional state in those moments to communicate something into your mind and into your heart that just flat out isn't true. You know why? Well, because Jesus 2,000 years ago made it clear. We have an enemy whose sole purpose, I came to bring a slice of the kingdom of heaven to earth so that people could encounter that irresistibleness to eternity with me. On the flip end, there's an enemy whose sole purpose is to be a thief. And all he wants to do is steal and kill and destroy. He wants to destroy you mentally. He wants to destroy your confidence. He wants to destroy your strength. He wants you to begin to believe by robbing you of your calling and your purpose and what God can do in and through you for the sake of this world. But check this out. But I came. I sacrificed myself. I gave up what was rightfully mine on the throne of heaven to come down to a broken world and to be hung up on a cross by broken people. I did that. You know why? So that you could experience life and life to the full. Jesus doesn't stop short. He's not like, yeah, I came just so that you could live. No. I came so that you could live a life unlike anybody else, so that you could experience life to the full, so that you could experience eternity to the full. And you know what eternity literally means? From now until forever. Eternity isn't something that starts after you die. He came to give you the best life possible from now until forever. But the only way we can walk in that is if we stop living in our own self-diagnosis. If we stop giving in to everybody else's diagnosis of who you are and how broken you are and the mistakes that you've made, we have to get past the lie. We have to get to the other side of diagnosis. And then secondly, we have to get to the other side of discouragement. Something so real, so powerful, and yet so numerous in our lives are the moments of discouragement. Am I right? That we all walk through moments of hills, but we certainly remember the moments of our lives where we walk through the valley. And we feel discouragement time and time again, much like this woman did. In verse 26, it says, she had suffered a great deal from many doctors, and over the years, she had spent everything she had to pay them. As if the story isn't bad enough, it's about to get worse. But she had gotten no better. In fact, she had gotten worse. You see, some of us in the moments of life like this woman, we attach this catchphrase to it, when it rains, it pours. Ever been there before? It's like not only are the circumstances and the indictments of my life not getting better, they're actually getting worse. Things are actually getting harder. I feel like I'm trying all the right things, and yet I keep going in the wrong direction. And just when you start to make progress in those moments of your life, it's like, all right, I'm finally moving in the right direction and doing the right things. Those are the very moments where it feels like the enemy swoops in and takes a piece of you. It's the moment where the enemy swoops in and takes what you didn't want to sacrifice. And it's like, I told you I should have been living on the outside. I told you I should have been playing it safe. This is what you get when you live life right down the middle. You get discouragement. You get hurt. And too often in our lives, from the people in the world around us, what we have been modeled is this. That when you walk through hurt and moments of discouragement, the best option you have is to throw in the towel. Just quit. Or if you want to feel like you're still making progress, start to play it safer than you've ever played it before. Because you don't want to walk through any more hurt. So just get to the edges. Just get out of the way of everything that's going on and just try to play on the sides of this life. But oftentimes, you've heard me say this countless times, oftentimes to experience God's best, we have to be willing to go through the worst and push through the pain and charge right through the middle and say, enemy, throw whatever you got at me, but I'm charging towards the goal with everything that I got. And you want to come along and take a piece of me? You're not going to discourage me enough because I know what the ultimate goal is. I'm just about jumping you and get to the other side. You can't take my ultimate hope. You can't take an eternity that's been determined by a Savior on the cross. Nothing you can do can discourage me enough to deter me from being a kingdom culture ambassador that walks out into this world with strength and confidence to say the world around me desperately needs what I've already got. And I refuse to keep it to myself. I refuse to keep it to myself. What would it look like for us to get to the other side of discouragement? And know that pain isn't necessarily the enemy. Pain is something that can push us forward and make us better. Pain is something that we walk through to get to something better on the other side. And so for us to live out our mission as Christ followers in an incredible way, we have to get to the other side of the diagnosis. We have to get to the other side of the discouragement. And then we have to get to the other side of the delay. We go back to verse 25, and it says this, a new underline for you. A woman in the crowd had suffered for 12 years. 12 years. 12 years she had sought every other possible solution before she chased with a newfound favor the ultimate solution. This guy named Jesus. You see, the reality is in our lives and in our mission, if you're looking for an excuse as to why you shouldn't take the risk of being a kingdom culture ambassador, if you're looking for an excuse as to why this just won't work, guess what? You're going to find it every single time. Why? Because I am a broken person who lives in a broken world. And what that means is this. In our broken world, the stars will never perfectly align that you'll ever be able to walk into a kingdom culture assignment in this world with zero risk and 100% assuredness of success. It just will not work that way. And yet what I do know to be true is that every single one of us in this room, every single one of us watching online, and every single person we rub elbows with are living a life that is fleeting. My life is but a vapor in the wind. And every person I come into contact to every single day is living a life that is fleeting. If that very truth for those of us in this room who are Christ followers doesn't create a sense of urgency and desperation, I don't know what will. You see, there's this reality in fleeting lives that tomorrow might be too late, y'all. Are we desperate yet? That we live in a city that according to the last census has 7,000 people who claim, I don't want anything to do with this guy named Jesus. And if my life ended tomorrow, my eternity would tip in the wrong way. And we, you and I, have been called to play a part in doing something about that. And check this out. In the right way. That's what we've been charged with. That's not just the responsibility we've been given. We're going to talk about this next week for the perfect capstone of this series. It's the privilege we've been given. We've been given a privilege to spread hope that this world can't give to a world that is living in hopelessness. Come on, y'all. That should light a fire underneath of us. There's no time for delay. tomorrow might be too late. And so we need to get in desperation mode for the sake of a world around us that needs light in their darkness now. And then lastly, we need to be people who are willing to get to the other side of distractions. To the other side of distractions. In verse 27, it says this. She had heard about Jesus, so she came up behind him through the crowd. And this is where this passage doesn't do you justice unless you have the picture that the scholars paint for us about just how much of a crowd it was. Shoulder to shoulder, pressed up against each other, on the verge of trampling each other. That's how tight the crowd was. And do you know the desperation that she worked with? I underlined the words for you there. She pushed through the crowd. She moved every distraction out of her way, everything that stood in her way. She moved out of the way for one purpose and one purpose only. I just need to touch Jesus. I just need to touch him. And you see, for some of us, it has become so easy for us to allow the distraction to become the goal. And here's the challenge, y'all. It's the challenge for me and for my wife and for our family. When are we going to get serious enough and desperate enough to sit down and lay our cards on the table and to say, what distractions have we allowed to become the goal? What things in our time and our finances and our reputation have we allowed to take a seat on the throne that it was never meant to take in our lives? And when are we going to get serious and desperate enough to move those things out of the way and begin here, to begin where she began? At the starting place for me as a Christ follower, if I want to be a kingdom culture ambassador, is that I must start with this realization. In order for people to feel Jesus through me, I have to be touching Jesus. And for me to realize, no matter what I walk through, all I need is you, Jesus. Nothing else. Nothing else will do. Nothing else will fix this. Nothing else will bring me the hope I need. Nothing else will bring me the contentment I've been searching for. Nothing else. I just need you. I need more of you. And there's all these distractions that have gotten in the way, but no longer. In this moment, I'm taking a stand. And I'm reaching out because I need to touch you so that when other people touch me, they can feel you. It's as simple as that, guys. It starts there. But the distractions will always be there, beckoning for your attention, beckoning for your touch. When are you going to be like this lady and just push it out of the way and say, no, I don't, I'm not looking for you. I'm just looking to touch Jesus. What's so cool is this. Throughout this entire series, we've been talking about kingdom culture and bringing kingdom culture to this earth. Do you know what that first word literally translates out to? Kingdom. It's the king's domain. That we want to bring a piece of the king's rulership to this earth for people to experience the power and the love and the grace and the mercy and the truth of the king. That when he rules, that's what he brings to the table. A little bit more of the king's domain. But what God knew was this. In order for us as humanity to be able to bring some of the king's domain to this earth, we needed to have some power and authority on this earth, some strength and some confidence. It's the reason why when he placed Adam and Eve on the earth, the first charge he gave was, I'm giving you dominion over the earth. I'm giving you power. I'm giving you authority. I'm giving you strength. I'm giving you confidence to walk out into this world and to begin to bring about change and impact. But he didn't stop there. When things got broken, he sent his son. And he said, the best step I know to take to fix this and to make you the ultimate kingdom culture ambassadors is it's not good enough just for you to know you have dominion over this earth. What I want you to know is this. I'm now making you an heir to the King. And every right I have, every power I have, every bit of strength I have, I'm giving that over to you. Don't believe me? Check out what Paul writes in Galatians chapter 4. Now you're no longer a slave. No longer a slave to your circumstances, no longer a slave to your fear, no longer a slave to your doubt, no longer a slave to your anxiety, no longer a slave to this world, but you are God's own child. And since you are his child, God has made you his heir. God has made you his heir. God says you can never fully walk in this kingship that I have handed over to you unless you find yourself capable of getting to the other side of the diagnosis and the delays and the discouragement and the distractions. But when you can do that and you find yourself getting to the other side, it's the moment where the game actually changes in your favor when you hear these two words. King me. King me. I've got everything I need. Everything's been handed to me. And now the kingdom culture impact that I'm capable of making goes to a whole new level because I pushed through, because I've gotten to the other side, because I've embraced that I am an heir to the throne. And that I've been given everything at my disposal that I need to walk into this world with strength and confidence, bringing a message that changes hearts and changes lives. And when we start running with that kind of desperation, that, my friends, is when kingdom culture begins to spread in our homes, in our neighborhoods, in our cities, and in our world, like a wildfire. It's what our world needs. How desperate are we to see that happen? Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, we thank you for being a God who never stopped it. Just figure it out on your own. Hopefully you can find your way to the other side. Hopefully you can make an impact. No. You went all the way. And you said, I love you so much that I'm making you an heir. I'm giving you every tool in your tool bag that you need to be a kingdom culture ambassador that changes this world in incredible ways. But God, to do that with desperation, knowing that time is fleeting, may we put aside the delays and the excuses we've been making. May we put aside the discouragement. May we put aside the self-diagnosis. May we put aside the distractions and chase after your calling and our purpose with a newfound fervor. May we know that the starting place, it can start right here, right now, in this moment. The starting place is this exclamation point. I need you. Nothing else. God, I'm sorry when I've made it about everything else, every other distraction in my life. But right here, right now, in this moment of worship, I'm reaching out to touch you. It's in your name that I pray. Amen.